This is CNN breaking news. This is CNN breaking news. CNN breaking news. CNN breaking news. CNN breaking news. Breaking news. Breaking news. Breaking news. Breaking news. Breaking 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 news.
This is Simon Shaheen. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Well, hello there. I am Neva Wartell, host of Music for the Masses, inviting you to join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon on an excursion of sound and rhythm, where we discover how much amazing music comes from places in the world you may be familiar with, or you've wondered about, or maybe never even heard of. Music for the Masses comes to you live from Catskill every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. only on listener-supported, solar-powered, community-based radio for open ears, open minds, and open hearts. 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Suitable for the avid globehopper and armchair traveler alike. You might want to pack a map and a sandwich.
El patrocinio de WGXC es proporcionado en parte por la Asociación Olana, presentando el tercer jueves de cada mes un día de visitas guiadas y concluyendo con el programa artístico Melodías con Paisajes. Los visitantes pueden experimentar sonidos globales mientras contemplan los paisajes del Valle de Hudson. Este mes, Mariachi Citali se presentará el jueves 17 de julio de 12 a 19 horas. Todos están bienvenidos. Más información en olana.org/Third Thursdays.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Jennifer of San Francisco, California. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny.
And we are I was going to say twice a month, but sometimes a month has more Tuesdays than that.
Yeah.
We are a movie talk show here on WGXC 90.7 FM Accra every second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. Jenny and I get on the airwaves to talk about movies. We usually pick a theme for each episode and watch movies around that theme, and then we talk about them on the show, and it's a whole lot of fun. Before we get into today's theme, I'm going to tell you about what's playing in the theaters in our area, starting with the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. Right now, we have Jurassic World Rebirth, F1, the movie, How to Train Your Dragon. You can find out more by going to WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
All right. And while we're over on that side of the river, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Highway Drive-In in Coxsackie. This weekend, we have, it's a four-screen drive-in. So on each screen, there's a double feature. And on screen one, we have Superman and a Minecraft movie. On screen two, Jurassic World Rebirth and How to Train Your Dragon. Screen three, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman and Barbarella. Thrilling. Screen 4, 28 Years Later, and Dangerous Animals. And if you're interested in more information about those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at highwaydrivenny.com. That's HIWAYdrivenny.com.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson, New York. Hold on one second. All right, that is the 8-screen theater that's on Fairview Avenue in Hudson. Right now, we have Jurassic World Rebirth, F1, Megan 2.0, 28 Years Later, Elio, How to Train Your Dragon, Lilo and Stitch, Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning, still hanging on, Superman, Puss in Boots The Last Wish, coming back, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. They're doing some repertory stuff. That's really cool. All right. So once again, those are the movies playing right now at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. You can find out more about showtimes and ticketing at spotlighttheater.com and then select the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
All right, and now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL in Hudson, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited. This week, we have Sabbath Queen, Drop Dead City, Sex, In the Mood for Love, and that looks like it, actually. There is on Saturday a special screening with the director of Drop Dead City with an intro and Q&A if you're interested. And yeah, if you're interested in any of these movies or anything else that's happening at TSL, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org.
Amazing. All right. Last but not least for me, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Story Screen Cinema, also on Fairview Avenue in Hudson, but that's the 3-screen movie theater that is near the Burger King. We have now playing Jurassic World Rebirth, The Life of Chuck, Materialists, and Elio, as well as several repertory screenings like Do the Right Thing. Actually, I'm sorry, that was yesterday. Dirty Dancing, Challengers,
fun,
and Joe versus the Volcano, part of their Hot Movies series. You can find out more by going to storyscreenpresents.com and clicking on their theater location.
All right, and my last movie theater to tell you about is Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have The Phoenician Scheme, The Back Room with Andy Ostroy and Essie Cupp, Swamp Dog Gets His Pool Painted, Tatami, Marley Matlin, Not Alone Anymore, Fellini's 8 1/2, and Kill the Jockey. And then heading over to the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, we have The Phoenician Scheme, The Materialists. Excuse me. I always want to put it at the front.
I know.
It just feels like there should
like
be
talking
one
there. Heads. Yeah. It's just talking, it's just heads. Talking heads. It's not the talking nope. heads.
Materialists. The Life of Chuck. F1. Devo. It Follows. Breadcrumb Trail. Us. And Superman. And if you're interested in any of those movies or more information, you can find out more at upstatefilms.org.
Amazing.
Wow.
That's it for theaters in our area for right now. I know. I'm so excited. Summertime, great time for the movies.
The best time, perhaps.
Great time for lots of things, including themes for our show.
Oh, true.
Jenny, have you ever been to summer camp? Did you go to summer camp?
I went to day camp as a kid. I never did an overnight. When I was like 10, I did a day camp at a Girl Scouts camp that was Harry Potter themed to give you a real
that rocks
moment in time. Yes. The year 2000.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Did you ever go to summer camp?
I also did a lot of day camps. Mm-hmm. As you know, I went to horse camp.
Oh,
as well
course.
As nature camp.
Yep.
And theater camp.
Oh my God, of
which
course.
Is a full encapsulation of me as a child. That's and as an adult,
a perfect Venn diagram of a band.
I know. And then I did, right when I was starting to feel too old for camp, mm-hmm. I had a friend who was a couple years younger than me, and it was right when we moved when I was a kid, and like I was so miserable because we moved.
Yeah.
And in a desperate attempt to kind of like, you know, when you move when you're really young, and also like pre social media, mm-hmm. of course. And then, yeah, like pre independent internet use, it's hard to stay in touch, right? Yeah. Or I had a hard time with it. Yeah. So this friend went to an all girls sleepaway camp one summer and really liked it. And then I went also the next summer, but I was 13 and I was starting to get a little H-O-R-N-Y.
Oh no.
And I was a little more interested in B-O-I-S.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I had an amazing time, yeah. but I definitely had a little like eye roll, like these girls don't even know.
Kids.
I also didn't know. This is famously the summer camp where I shaved my butt for the dance with the boys camp across the lake.
It's so cute.
I want to be clear. I didn't shave any other part. No, I just shaved my butt.
Just the butt. Just in case. You never know what's going to happen.
I might get lucky and you might touch my butt under the pants.
I gotta make sure that's hairless. Just what if they could feel it through the shorts? You never know.
Once again, this is me, a kid who is like, I'm very precocious and I'm more mature than these other girls. I'm please don't come in the stall. I'm busy right now.
I'm so busy. That's such a good like encapsulation of what it's like to be a preteen, where you're like, I am an adult, please treat me like an adult, but actually
all
I'm
y'all
so...
are fools.
Yeah,
like, and thinking, I know,
oh my god, truly, like thinking everyone else is so clueless. And you're like, I'm so smart, I'm so adult, why don't any adult men want to look at me?
I know.
I don't understand.
I was so mad. I was so mad when like anyone over 18 was like, no,
you're a kid. And you're just like, a kid. What do you mean? Oh, it's being a kid. It's so hard.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
I feel like maybe we should. Okay, so usually Jenny and I for our show will pick a theme and then we'll watch different movies, mm-hmm. or maybe just one movie in common, and we'll keep it a secret from each other until we get on the air. And mm-hmm. that's part of the fun is then we get to talk about
that's
it
our treat.
And surprise each other on the air. But tonight we're doing an experiment. We both watched the same movie. Mm-hmm. We watched two movies.
Two movies the same.
Both the same.
Yeah.
Do you want
to? We have to.
We just have to let it.
We got to go.
We got to go
for it. We
got
to talk about it. So if you couldn't infer from our conversation, our theme this week was summer camps.
Summer camp.
What an incredible time.
So good.
What an incredible time.
Huge time.
I felt myself struggling with this theme because I feel that it's really it's a classic subgenre of the slasher genre, mm-hmm. like of slasher movies. There's lots of slasher movies that take place at summer camps, such as Friday the 13th, famously. Yep. And then there's also a lot of like really trashy, like
teen comedies,
H-O-R-N-Y, 80s teen comedies that take place at summer camps. A large part of that, I think, my theory is that it's because they're really cheap filming locations.
That's a really good point. And they also are so like deeply associated. Well, they're also deeply entwined with youth.
Yes, absolutely.
And a lot of like movies that were made for youth audiences were either horror or sex comedies.
Right, exactly. Those are the two. Those are like the two big money makers.
And like they churned them out because like they didn't, and especially slashers, like they didn't have to be good.
Right, exactly.
But people would still go see them.
Right, they're cheap
and they would
to
make so much money.
Absolutely. And it's like the summer camp is such a great filming location for that, because it's like it's usually something that already exists. You can just go there.
The set is already there.
It's like you're just in the woods, so you don't need any like elaborate buildings. Nobody needs crazy outfits. Nope. Everyone's just wearing their normal clothes. Like,
it's so easy.
It's great.
And you're also probably staying in the same location the entire time.
Totally. Yeah, it's like there's not,
and all the cast and crew is lodging.
Exactly. And yes, the cabins,
they're there.
Perfect. But so I was feeling really I was having a hard time finding movies that I wanted to watch, because I was kind of like, I don't know, man, like this isn't, I watched like one kind of new movie and I didn't like it. And then I was like, maybe this just isn't a genre for me. And then Amanda very graciously gave me two of the movies on her watch list. And, I loved them both. I really liked them both a lot.
They're both so great.
They're
so great.
So as former teens ourselves, we should start with the one that I loved it so much.
We got to talk about the winner.
With the winner of
the
all.
Winner of maybe all camp movies.
Yeah, totally.
It's funny. So just again, to go back very quickly to like general camp movies. It's funny because much like ski mountain movies, I think of it as like such a stereotypical classic of like either sex like comedies or slashers. There's not that many.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be like a never ending bin to pull from.
It's really wild. There's not that many, and it's really like a lot of them are bad, which is fine. Like that's kind of part and parcel of that genre, but
it's not entirely what we're doing here. Like no. I kind of need some.
I want something that's like fun to watch.
I need like a little fat on the bone.
Exactly, something to like talk about. You know, for roughly an hour on a local radio station, for example,
which I think we can do with this movie that we love so much
easily. Okay, so the first movie that I watched, which was a recommendation for, or not a recommendation so much as a watch list,
it was our plan.
We planned it and Amanda suggested it. It's a movie from 1980 called Little Darlings that I loved so much. I almost started tearing up at the end.
I know. Like, oh, I loved it with all of my heart. It was so beautiful. This movie stars Christy McNichols and Tatum O'Neill, two child stars of the era. Tatum O'Neill famously being Ryan O'Neill's son. That's his name.
Daughter.
Sorry.
Ryan.
And then Christy McNichol was famous for being in a TV show.
She was in a sitcom called Family, I think, which I've never heard of. It's funny because she looked immediately familiar to me, but I don't think I've actually seen anything else she's been in. She also looks like a person that we know in real life. So that could have definitely been it.
She looks just like our friend Adelaide.
Yeah.
Want to take it away?
Please continue.
All right. So Christy McNichol plays Angel and Tatum O'Neill plays Ferris. And they are two 15-year-old girls who are heading off to Camp Little Wolf for the summer, along with a bunch of other 15-year-old girls. Both of these movies, as a side note that I watched, I was like, aren't they too old for camp? Do people really go to camp when they're 15?
I don't know. It does feel like at least in movies, it does feel like kids do it through until they're in high school. And then like,
it's crazy.
Camp counselors are supposed to be like 16, 17, I assume.
I guess that's right. Yeah. I had a couple moments where I was like, what are you guys doing at camp?
Yeah.
But anyways, so they head off to camp. Angel is from a poor neighborhood and Ferris is a rich girl. And soon enough, they meet all of their soon-to-be cabin mates, which also includes Cinder, who is a teen model who is engaged to a man.
It's so funny.
On their bus ride to Camp Little Wolf, the girls stop at a rest stop, and in the bathroom, they confront each other about their sexual experiences, and they find out that the only two virgins among them are Ferris and Angel. And then when they get to camp, Cinder, who has a lot of modeling money, bets all of her residual money from whatever like
it's a hair commercial.
It's a hair curler or something. She bets all of her residuals from her commercial for the summer, which equals $100, to whoever can lose their virginity first at their time at Camp Little Wolf.
Incredible. It then becomes this huge camp-wide bet where half of the campers take Angel's side and half take Ferris's side.
Yeah.
And a bunch of girls all make t-shirts that say Angel on them because they're like, you're going to do it. You're going to do it. And it's such a fun and funny and like genuinely so sweet movie. Like it's so good.
It really contains it all. So in my like brief reading of the critics' reception on Wikipedia, so a couple critics, it seems like at the time, were like, this is a great movie, but like the vibes, or it doesn't know what movie it wants to be, because sometimes it like it's so smart and respectful of sex. And I'm now watching it now, I'm like, a movie is absolutely allowed to contain both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like this movie has a lot of like teen sex comedy ass. It's very comedic.
Yeah.
And it's driven by girls, which is very exciting.
It's so exciting.
And then it actually does handle the subject of virginity and sex very respectfully.
Yeah. And like super sensitively. Like it feels, it's funny to hear that because I'm like, at no point in the movie did I feel like it was not respectful or like thoughtful. Like even when it's really funny, there's no part of it where like, any of the girls don't have agency. Like, they're all, it's so much about them and their internal experience of what's happening to them.
Yeah.
It's so, like,
well, that's what I think it was not, people were not saying that it was disrespectful. Mm. They were saying that, like, it's, okay, so here's the quote from Roger Ebert at the time saying, quote, "The scenes in which the characters actually confront the realities of sex are handled so thoughtfully and tastefully that they almost seem to belong to another movie."
Oh, interesting.
Where I'm like, that he's correct. Yeah. They are so thoughtfully handled. Totally. But I think movies are allowed to have both.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they fit so well into the movie because it is really like, it's so entertaining. Like, it really is about like this group of girls all at camp together, like forming these relationships with each other. And then also trying to form relationships with boys who they like. Ferris specifically she decides that her mark will be one of the camp counselors, who's this older guy who's like probably in his 20s, really.
Yeah. I mean, the actor like looks old as the hills.
Looks, yeah.
I mean, like, he looks, he's very in handsome. His
30s. He's very handsome. But he's cute. He looks like a beetle or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He totally looks like a beetle. He's got beetle energy. But he really does. Oh my God. But yeah, like, I'm sure he's supposed to be just in his
20s. Yeah, totally. And so, like, she kind of projects upon him. Like, he has a little bit of character. His character is mainly just like, he's like a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. That's the nice thing about this movie too, is it doesn't actually try to pull it down into kind of like a moral tale, mm-hmm. or like a cautionary tale is what I was looking for.
Yeah.
It doesn't try to pull it down in that like, oh, these girls were treating it like a game.
Yeah.
Well, look what they got. Like, guys are nasty.
Right.
The guys in this movie are also sweet. Dealing with like their own complex emotions, yeah. surrounding sex.
Totally.
And it's so nice.
It's really nice.
It's one of the things that really bumps this movie up further.
It's really lovely. Yeah. Like, no one suffers the consequences of losing their virginity.
No.
Like, it's like, so, to give away like maybe a little bit more. So as the movie goes on,
I think we can just spoil it. I think we should spoil it.
Let's talk about it. So Ferris sets her sights on this older camp counselor, and has like a huge crush on him. And all of the other girls, of course, are trying to facilitate them hooking up because they have money on
the line. They have money in the game.
Yeah. And so she like fakes a drowning in the pool and then gets like private swim lessons with him. But they have like a genuinely, like sweet connection where, you know, they chat a lot and it's very lovely. And then at the same time, Angel sets her sights on a boy from the camp across the lake who is named Randy. And when he showed up, I was like, God, that kid looks like Matt Dillon.
And guess
And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, that's Matt Dillon.
It's Matt Dillon's second movie.
It's crazy. I was like, I saw him and I was like, man, that kid looks exactly like Matt Dillon. That's crazy. But there's no way. He's way too young to have been.
Yeah.
This kid in this movie. And then I was like, no, he's exactly the right age.
Apparently for the casting call, there was like a sea of boys.
Incredible.
And the casting director, one of the writers or something, was like, that's the one.
I mean, that they're guy so right. He's so cute.
He's perfect.
He's like also like the perfect like crush object for a girl who's 15. Like,
and exactly.
He's such a sweetie pie.
Exactly. And then the way that he plays his character, he's also supposed to be 15. He's supposed to be the same age. And he does a perfect job of being kind of like he's in touch with his emotions a little bit, but he's also defensive.
Right.
And
he's also 15. So he's also like uncertain and feels like shy too.
He really acts his age. It's like wonderful. Like he's not a total jerk at all. He has a lot of depth, but is afraid of his own depth.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's really perfect.
It's so sweet. So as the movie goes on, like each Angel and Ferris both kind of are pursuing their own love interests, if you will. And what we see is Ferris finally goes to Gary's cabin late at night. And like propositions him and he's like, no, you're a kid. I'm so sorry.
No.
I'm a teacher. Like his real job outside of summer camp is he's a teacher. And he's like, I'm a teacher. We can't do this. Like maybe if you were 21, like this would work. Maybe I would fall in love with you, but like, it's not going to happen, kid. And like sends her on her way. And then, Angel, the first time she tries to hook up with Matt Dillon and she gets too scared and she gets really nervous and like feels so uncomfortable I feel like I've skipped over some stuff, but this is kind of like the culmination.
We'll get to the you know, the meat of it, and then we'll pick through everything else.
Totally. And so she kind of like backs down at the last minute and then tries again the next night, and the two of them do have sex, and she feels so complicated about it. Like, she feels really changed by it in this way that I think is like really like alarming is maybe not the right word, but like it kind of freaks her out.
Yeah.
In this way where she's like, okay, like I have to think about this now.
Yeah.
And so ultimately what happens is Ferris lies and says that she does hook up with Gary, and Angel lies and says that she does not hook up.
And it's so perfect. It makes so much sense. Even just that little play there, because in that interaction that Ferris has with, what's his name?
Gary.
Yeah. Gary. It is really tender and intimate. Like, they don't, no kiss and no touching. But he's very, I love his character too, because I think some people would maybe think he entertains it too much. But I actually think that he really respects her feelings and urges.
He takes her seriously.
As a young woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
He takes her seriously, and that's so refreshing. And so even though he does say no, I gotta send you on your way, they have a nice conversation.
He's like very gentle about it. It's really sweet.
And he does say, he's like, I think you're wonderful. And yeah, like you said, Jenny, if you were 21, like I might fall in love with you.
Yeah, totally.
And so there is a level of intimacy to it that actually kind of like fulfills what she actually wanted, which was like the romance.
Yeah, capital R romance.
The romance of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what you're imagining of, someone's imagining might be like.
Yeah.
And then, Angel, you know, like having actually had sex is experiencing this like barrage of very confusing feelings that aren't necessarily, entirely bad feelings at all. It's just like an extremely complicated feeling, an extremely complicated transitional moment in a young person's life.
Totally.
And it's so overwhelming that it absolutely makes sense that she would then, without talking to Ferris's character, lie.
Yeah, like
the same night.
It feels so private for her, where she's just like, it feels so familiar to me also, that like sensation.
I know. I was going to say,
it's like incredible. As somebody, it's so well done.
I'm like, how personal do I get on the radio?
Yeah,
but
totally.
As somebody who had the same experience at the same age, like also being like, oh, like, and in a positive way, nothing
totally.
Bad,
no,
but
no,
like
no.
Being like, oh, like I'm not a kid anymore.
Yes, absolutely.
What does this mean?
Yeah.
What have I done?
Right.
I can never undo this.
Yeah.
Like all of those feelings.
Yeah. And that's what it feels like for me, like her deciding to not tell anyone is kind of like, she's experienced this thing that feels like overwhelmingly private and like intimate. And she's like, it's no longer like fodder for a game for me.
Yeah.
Now it is just something that I have experienced and I have to like think about as I move forward with my life.
And also lying about it having happened at all and saying it didn't maybe brings you closer to when it hadn't happened yet. And that is much more familiar territory to you.
Absolutely.
It's like all like, those years
before. I don't
know
that I want to talk about this with anybody.
Yeah. And it really, the movie, like, it does an incredible job.
Yeah. It's truly like, it's a pretty stunningly like accurate and sweet depiction of this time. I was wondering, because like we were talking earlier about the director, who is a guy and has made some other movies that I have not seen, but are probably great. But it's three women wrote it. And it's like, that's why.
I know. I was like, there had to. I did not look into the writers in time. But I did. Ron Maxwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ron Maxwell,
I did see that it
director.
Was him. And I was like, there's got to be.
The writers are Daylene Young, Kimmy Peck. Or I guess it's just Daylene Young and Kimmy Peck. And it's like, Daylene Young also wrote the Babysitter's Club movie.
Oh, amazing.
So like perfect.
Amazing.
Makes sense. But it does just like, it has so like an unmistakable touch of like a woman writing it.
Because it has an unmistakable realness to it of what it's like to lose your virginity.
And it's also like, just like,
as
I mean,
young girl.
The instant it started, like it opens with Angel like smoking a cig, like hanging out in a yard. And then like some guy, some like older guy comes and like catcalls her. And she, like...
kicks him in the nuts.
Well, yeah, she pretends to entertain it for a second and then immediately kicks him in the nuts.
It's so good. It's
so... And then, like, the next scene after that is her meeting a bunch of kids on the bus. And it's, like, all girls and they're all, like, immediately forming this camaraderie. And, like, their conversation is so... It just feels so real to me and so, like, rare to see from a movie of that time where it's like, oh, yeah, this is a conversation between, like, six girls on a bus all just, like... joking around.
It yes,
it's so refreshing. So, it's like insanely
so,
good.
We're so used to like depictions of young people in movies being kind of like ham-fisted mm-hmm. and like oh, just yeah, yeah, like we're so used to it that like that kind of like overdone depiction mm-hmm. of young people is kind of natural to me as like, oh yeah, but that's like movie teenagers.
Right, totally.
That's how they are yeah. in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So you forget that some movies can actually handle like portraying interactions between young people realistically.
Yeah, it's real. And it's also like really fun. Like they're just like, they're like joking around. And it's so, I was so like immediately sucked into this movie where I was like, oh, is right? this like incredible? Is this movie amazing? And it I was is. Like, yeah, it is. It literally is.
Okay, that's what I was saying too about so these critics at the time missing the mark with being like, it seems like these are two separate movies.
I'm like, you don't know what you're talking like, about. What
was
it?
There was another quote. Oh yeah, like there it seems like there was a couple critics. Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote, quote, Miss O'Neill and Miss McNichol, both lovely and accomplished actresses, are much better than their material, and they go a long way toward lending the story a little charm. Not untrue, yeah. But I don't think the material is bad at all.
I don't either. Yeah.
And I actually thought that all of the characters, even though we spend much less time with them, feel interesting
yes.
and fully fleshed out as yes. much as you can flesh out a character in a teen comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. Like some of them obviously feel like a little bit like archetypes, but they all have some interiority that makes them really compelling. Like now it's time to talk about Cynthia Nixon is in this movie.
It's Cynthia Nixon's first
she's
movie.
Like a baby. I think she is probably also 15, but she looks like 10.
She's
and she
so...
plays like a little hippie girl who's so cute and
you see her parents at the end who are hippies. It's they're picking so her up in like
cute.
A bus.
It's so cute. But it's like even her who like could just be a caricature of like a hippie kid, like she has genuine like affection for both of these girls, like Angel and Ferris yeah. and like their other cabin mates, and it has like it brings such texture to this world that like all of these girls have a personality and mm-hmm. they all care about each other and like but also like act like kids yeah. where like they're also peer pressuring each other. Like there's obviously there's a classic food fight scene.
Yeah,
it's that's really fun.
I mean it's the, so the comedic parts of this movie that feel like a classic teen comedy mm-hmm. are so wonderful. I was like smiling ear
yes!
to ear.
I had such a good time watching this movie. It's so good.
Well, oh, and I also want to say Cynthia Nixon's little hippie girl character, even they give her a tiny, albeit simple, little arc.
Yes.
Where she, yeah, so she's a little hippie girl, so she's a pacifist.
Yeah.
And then they've had enough of the model girl who, even though she is kind of, they're all friends, Cinder has been the pressuring mm-hmm. bully of yeah. the group, you
she's
know,
she's like running the show.
She's
in
a brat.
Way.
She's yeah. a rich girl. She feels more mature than the others because she is not a virgin and she is gonna get married yeah, to a man.
Like, girl, you're 15.
Exactly. Her parents sent her to camp yeah. because they want her to get over it.
Yes,
like
exactly.
she mentions that.
Yeah.
But they've kind of had enough of her. She talks down to especially Angel.
Yeah.
Angel starts out like as the less liked yeah. one.
She's on like the outs with everybody kind of.
Exactly. Cause she's kind,
she's
of,
kind
a
of a
toughie.
Punk. Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
But at the end, they're all kind of like, well, you know what? They tell Cinder, they're in a group and they tell Cinder like, listen, we're going to tell, the camp that Ferris lied.
Yeah.
We're going to tell everybody that we lied.
Because Gary, the camp counselor's job is now in jeopardy because everybody thinks that he had sex with a teenager.
Yep, exactly. and basically they're saying, you know what? We went through our own things with this and we're going to come out with the truth.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. And Cinder gets mad and, you know, little hippie girl Cynthia Nixon punches her in the face, the little pacifist.
It's incredible.
They give her a little tiny arc.
They give her a little arc, and it's so sweet. And then it's like also all of the other girls in the cabin all like own up to all being virgins. And it's so cute.
It's so,
like, they're all like, yeah, no, me too. Like, yeah. Like, you're just kind of playing into this. It is such a, like, it's such a good depiction of like peer pressure and like trying to fit in with groups of people, but also it has like that cinematic quality of them all like owning up to it at the end, but they also all still like respect each other. And then it has the like beautiful ending where Ferris and Angel have been rivals this entire time.
Yes.
And then as they go home and get off the bus together, they're best friends. They become best friends.
It's so sweet.
It's so beautiful.
It's so sweet. It's a truly accurate and like, I mean, accurate is maybe a funny word, but like it is up to the task. It does a great job of portraying this tiny era of your life and maybe an even tinier moment in it where you're old enough. Like, yeah, you're still such a baby, but you're old enough that like what's going to get you the in and make you feel cool is a very confusing to figure out.
Totally.
And so it feels like, oh, is it sexual experience,
right?
Is it boys and girls,
right? Is it like fitting in with this other group of girls,
because you're still young, but you're just old enough that it's the thing that gives you the key is no longer what it used to be.
Yeah.
And it's just something else.
I feel like it really does. I'm like still thinking about those stupid reviews, and I'm like, I feel like it walks the line between realism and like being just a good cinematic story really well.
It does an amazing job at it.
It has those incredible moments of like pathos with like these girls. Like there's when Angel goes to hook up with Matt Dillon, like the first time, and like can't go through with it, and he's kind of like, what, why, you're like so hot and cold, what's happening? And he's like, okay, I'm just gonna go, because like I don't know what's going on. And she like tears up for the first time and says like, but I like you.
Yeah.
And
like, do you not think I'm pretty? Like, she's like,
oh my god, it's so like unbelievably moving.
I know. Oh my god, Christy McNichol in particular.
She's
given
good.
A little bit more to do with her character
totally,
than Tatum O'Neill is. Who, like, Tatum O'Neill, her impetus for trying to fit in is that she's a rich girl.
Totally.
And she's always been kind of isolated because of that.
Totally.
And so she's trying to not have that be the main thing about her.
Right. She's like,
I gotta hiding
have something.
That.
Yeah.
She's trying to. But she's not given as much as Angel's character.
Yeah, she's
Kristen McNichol's character is given to do.
Totally. And it's so like those moments are so genuine and moving. And like, I mean, honestly, even like because Ferris's relationship with sex is so like idealistic and like romantic, like that I also felt like I really recognized. Like there's something about her, like her desire for like this older guy who's not accessible, and then like going back to the cabin and like lying about it in this really like big R romantic way is like so also feels so relatable and recognizable to me. And like those things combined with these like kind of silly like cute camp antics, it's such a perfect way to make a movie.
Well, and it also feels still real. Like, because that's like, I feel like
that's
that time of
life
is also full of
it's
like,
silly.
You're a kid and life is still silly. I am also forgetting that there's a whole section of the movie where there's like a parents' day and Ferris's dad visits and she finds out her parents are getting divorced.
Yeah. And like,
so there is this kind of,
like,
she's going through it and an attachment to the idea of romance.
Like romance and like big ideas of what that means, and like that's kind of her arc, is her dealing with that and then like coming to the end and realizing that like, well, maybe like that's not, you know, like just grappling with the reality of like human relationships versus what's in her mind, and also like that she isn't ready, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, oh god, it's so, Little Darlings,
I know I'm like gonna cry,
so
it's
good.
So
I know,
good.
Me too. It's
so
good.
Beautiful. I like I forget how I heard about it, so I think I did read too. So the music in this movie is also
it's
amazing.
So good.
It's so good. Like, the movie ends with Let Your Love Flow by Bellamy yes. Brothers. There's Blondie in there. There's a bunch of excellent music in there. And then apparently there were some, like, between its theatrical release and then its subsequent home video releases, there was a lot of licensing issues mm-hmm. that happened. So it wasn't released on video for a really long time.
Yeah, it's been like really hard to see.
Yeah, it was like 40 years yeah. or something between its theatrical release yeah. and its. And then Vinegar Syndrome is a movie release company that does a lot of like restorations of amazing cult classics. And they re-released it, restored with its original music yeah. in 2023. And
2024. It's literally only been available. Sorry, I just pulled up the Wikipedia as you were talking.
Yeah.
It's literally only been available to watch for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy.
Insane. And so I feel like that's how it came on my radar.
Yeah.
Is, totally, there's no sense. Other way yeah, totally, it would
from
have
the
been.
Vinegar Syndrome.
We're so lucky. Thank you to things like Vinegar Syndrome. For bringing us like Wake and Fright.
Yes. Oh my God.
And like, I mean, thank that was a whole other story,
God.
But
yeah. Thank God.
Oh yeah. And I'm also sorry to jump around, but again, thinking about Angel's character, which we didn't say too, is that she's very precocious. Mm-hmm. She's a baddie and she's tough and precocious. And part of the beginning of the movie too, which also feels very realistic to that age, is like, because she's very mature and also immature and inexperienced, she's like, I'm not interested in boys. When all the yeah, girls are talking about totally. Boys, she's like, I think they suck.
Yeah.
Which is a very, like, is, yeah. again, like, very mature and realistic, but yeah. also feels like how it feels when you're even younger and yeah. you're like, girls versus boys. Like,
yeah,
boys,
totally.
Boys drool.
Boys drool. Or girls rule. Classic.
And so they all are like, oh, you're a lesbian.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Which, like, that is also a very specific weird peer pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
That young kids do to each other, too. Yep.
And she is, like, a little butch. And then also, yeah. spoiler alert, Christy McNichol, turns out, is a lesbian.
That's why I had to bring
Great
it up.
News.
That's why I had to bring it up.
Great news.
How else were we going to tell everybody?
Thank God. Also, Tatum O'Neal, huge news, also bisexual. Yep. Great news. That's yep. what I understand from reading Letterboxd reviews of this, but I have not researched it even a little bit, is that this is a huge movie for the queer community.
It's not, for the gays and
not
theys?
A surprise. It's for the gays and huge news. Here I am. Are they them telling you it's for the gays and theys? Which makes sense because it is like, for me, there's so much going on in this movie, but it is like really sweet that, you know, it's about these two girls like yeah. really connecting with each other.
It really is.
It's really beautiful.
And also, like, I think of Christy McNichol's part of Angel's arc too, somebody who's never even entertained mm-hmm. the idea yeah. of sexual attraction to boys, because it's seemingly not even been on her radar because she is just getting older
yes,
now.
Totally.
And when she finally does pick a target in Matt Dillon and she looks closer at his butt, you know, it's yep. like this really like, oh wait, actually maybe there's
well
something here.
When you first see Randy, yeah, the camera starts at his butt and then moves its way up to his hair, and his back is turned to you and you're like, that's a woman. And he turns around and you're like,
yes!
Oh no, it's Matt Dillon.
Yeah,
but it's true, like all of their scenes where they're kissing too, I was really struck and thinking about, I was like, it does look like two women are kissing, because
yeah.
he has like beautiful long luscious hair, like the same length as hers.
Yeah.
And there is something like very like, obviously it's a girl and a boy making out, but there's something very queer about it anyway. And it's so, I was just
and
so
and just
like,
her exploring sexual attraction at all.
Yeah, totally.
To anybody.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, yeah, it's yeah. again, that really so long, what feels like such a long moment in time, but it's really so short, where like you've just suddenly jumped from being a kid
yeah.
to being something that's not a kid.
Yeah.
But not an adult.
Totally.
Whereas before you were like, you were not thinking about any of this
yeah,
at all.
Totally.
And now you're just thinking about other people's bodies.
Yeah. Like, it does. It feels like it's really, it's come for her so fast. And she is so like, Yeah, she has such, her character is so interesting. Like, she is really going, she's going through it.
She's going through it.
I love her. I love this movie.
You guys, you gotta watch Little Darlings. It is actually streaming for free on YouTube right now.
Go off YouTube.
And it looks great. Like, there's, you know, it's not a poorly, poor upload.
Yeah, it's not a poorly upload. I loved it. I loved it so much.
I loved it with all my little heart.
Truly. All right. Should we talk about the other movie that we both watched?
Yes, we should.
We watched another movie. Oh, I'm so sorry. Little Darlings was 1981, I think. I think I'm...
Oh, I thought it...
I messed that. Unless...
I think Little Darlings was 80, and then our next film, The Burning, was from 1981.
I miswrote them in my notes.
The Burning is a, now we're going a little more classic.
Yeah.
I'm glad we spent more of the chunk of time talking about Little Darlings because there's more to talk about there. The Burning is a classic, 80s summer slasher.
So fun.
Let me hold on. I got to look up when Friday the 13th was, because was it before or
it
after?
It was before this, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think so.
Yeah, so Friday the 13th is 1980. Yeah. So right close. After that.
Yeah, this The Burning is really cool. Something that's a bummer about it is that it was produced by the Weinstein brothers.
Oh, wait, it wasn't just produced by it.
It was also a story from Harvey Weinstein.
Literally, unfortunately, everything great is produced by Harvey Weinstein. Like, a lot of great stuff. Yeah. So, like, we unfortunately live in that world.
Yeah.
But this was written by Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. It's adapted from like a camp story that he heard at camp as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because from the Wikipedia page, Harvey Weinstein was desperate to get in on like the slasher genre, and specifically trying to get this movie made to like ride the coattails of Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Because it was making a ton of money.
You can tell because, this is the early 80s is when like the slasher genre is ramping up super fast
because
you just had Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yep. You just had Halloween in 1978. So things are just popping off. And then you get Friday the 13th in 1980.
Yeah.
So this movie takes place in an upstate New York summer camp.
Sure does.
We open on a group of teenage boys speaking in hushed tones about wanting to prank the drunken and hated camp caretaker Cropsy. And they do so by...
They sneak out of their cabin, which I have to say, before we go any further, gave me such powerful nostalgia for sneaking out at night. Like, mm-hmm. It was like, God, I want to sneak out somewhere so bad. I'm an adult, so I don't...
I know. I don't need to, like, sneak cigarettes and stuff anymore, but, like, I want to.
It was
so
I was
bad.
Like, oh, my God, like, seeing the, like, six of them or whatever, like, creeping past the cabin really quietly, I was like, God, I want to do that. And it's like, you can just, like, go outside. You're an adult. Anyway... These boys sneak out of their cabin. They all watch outside the window as one of them goes into Cropsy's cabin, and inside of a box lights two candles inside of an old skull that they, I assume, dug up somewhere that's got a bunch of worms crawling around.
It's an ooey gooey skull with flames.
It's nasty. And so they light the skull on fire and then sneak out and then knock on the window to wake up Cropsy, and he sees the skull and he gets really scared and he knocks it onto himself and then he catches on fire.
Yep.
And then you know what's next to his bed? A big thing of gasoline.
Yep.
So he does just, he burns right up.
He's engulfed in some fiery flames.
Yep. And then from there we see a hospital where an intern is talking to an orderly who's like, I got to show you this really gross guy.
He's like, listen, man, you want to be a doctor? You're going to have to see this kind of stuff every day.
Yeah.
This guy is nasty.
He's gross.
And we don't get to see Cropsy in his hotel bed, but we do get to see his gnarled and burned hand grab the intern or the orderly.
Yeah.
And then, this is the very beginning opening montage of Cropsy is released from the hospital. And the shot is of him getting wheelchaired to the doors of the hospital while there's an overlaid narration of like the voices of doctors and nurses being like, sorry, the skin grafts didn't take. You'll adjust to normal life eventually.
I don't think you should go back to that summer camp. I know you bothered. I know those kids really bothered you, but don't worry about it.
Try not to blame those kids. Accidents happen.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Do we think that Cropsey forgave those kids?
Yeah, definitely. They didn't do it. They were just messing
around. No! Because back we are at not the same summer camp, but another summer camp on the very same lake in upstate New York. This is the movie that I watched first where I was like, how old is everybody?
Yes.
And who is a counselor and who is not?
Who is a counselor and who is not?
I could not tell.
Impossible. This is definitely like Little Darlings. They all kind of seem like they should be at camp. They're pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
The Burning, I'm like, some of these campers are 25. Mm-hmm. I do not know which one's a counselor. I simply could not tell you.
No idea.
It's impossible to say.
So we have some really exciting film debuts.
Oh my God.
In this one.
Wild.
Jason Alexander.
Looking so good.
He is so cute. There's some confusion as to who's a counselor and who's not.
I think he's a camper.
I thought he was a counselor.
But he's in a cabin with all those other boys.
I thought they were all counselors, though.
Oh, maybe.
I think they're
but then
all.
Who are the campers?
Well, there's like one mess hall scene where there's a bunch of little kids. That's and I was true. Like, oh, here's okay. the campers. Right. And then the camp director is like, some of you older ones are going on the canoe trip tomorrow. It's 13 miles, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And then we see the canoe trip and it's like all of our characters.
It's all counselors.
And I was who I thought were. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it was confusing.
It's very confusing who's a counselor and who's a camper. This movie, it doesn't care. We're at camp. It's fine.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Everybody's H-O-R-N-Y and they're acting goofy.
Thank God.
But Jason Alexander was like a little chiller.
Yeah.
You know, he was a little cooler.
He's one of the only good boys. All these other boys at this camp, Cropsey, get them. Cropsey,
yeah.
Please get them.
They're naughty.
Yeah. I was hoping for more nasty murders of these bad boys.
I was hoping so too. But then again, it was made by Weinsteins. But also, yeah. I can't entirely blame it on them. It is an 80s slasher.
It's true.
Where we're like, the slasher is all that much more popular now, and it's getting into like churning them out territory.
Yeah,
where
totally.
We're trying to see boobs and frankly women die.
Yeah, 100%. That was the energy. Unfortunately, tragically.
Yes. However,
that being said, it's a really good movie.
I had a great time.
I really liked it. It looks so good.
Jason Alexander's here. Fisher Stevens,
God,
also here. I saw him in the movie and I was like, that kid looks familiar, and then thought nothing else of it.
That's Fisher Stevens, baby.
And then Holly Hunter?
Holly Hunter. Okay, I think she's when the camp counselors who maybe are campers all go on a canoe trip together, I think she's the one girl with blunt bangs, because I was looking for her. I was like, where the heck is she? She has maybe one line where the camera is not looking at her as she speaks. And I was
so
like, I'm
crazy.
Pretty sure that's Holly Hunter.
Yeah, so we got some debuts in here. I'm sorry. There's just a guy across the street carrying his big old bulldog. Oh.
Wow.
It's too hot to walk.
Yeah, you gotta carry him. Oh my God.
It is. I see The Burning talked about as this, like, in the peak 80s slasher territory, like not one of the more popular ones, but above the tier of like all the real garbage ones.
I maybe a controversial opinion. I liked it more than Friday the 13th.
I did too.
Yeah, because I think
it's way better.
Yeah, I thought it was really. I really thought like it visually looks so good.
Yeah,
like it's a really good looking movie.
It looks great. It looks really good.
Like some of the characters are really nasty, but I think that kind of adds to the atmosphere of it in this way where it's like, it's a pretty gross movie about like gross people.
Yeah.
These really terrible teens all getting killed by a really terrible guy.
Yeah.
Like, it has like a pretty like hateful energy in this way that feels purposeful in this movie. Like it feels so much more
belongs
like
in this movie.
It belongs in this movie. It feels like kind of like a really like dark cursed movie in that way.
Yeah, exactly. It feels almost like it has an element of like not just the horror but like a true like survivalism, not yes. because there's a killer in the woods, but no. because everybody is terrible.
Everyone's so
and
terrible.
Being so brutal.
They're so brutal to each other.
I recently, one of the reasons I wanted to do the summer camp theme is because I've been craving summer mm-hmm. slashers, and I did rewatch Friday the 13th, mm-hmm. and I will say I liked it so much more than I did when I first saw it, but mostly because what I liked is I noticed the atmosphere a lot more. Like there was a lot of great bug sounds, yeah. which this had too. And I think that Friday the 13th also used like mostly natural light. I'd have yeah, to look this
totally.
Up, but you
that
can't see nothing.
You can't see nothing.
So this
in
movie
that
just like yeah. automatically looks better because yeah. I can actually see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I will say Cropsey's really scary.
Cropsey's really scary.
And I wanted a little more Cropsey.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's the thing is that it kind of has that funny thing where no murders happen for like a good hour. Mm-hmm. Like, and then finally we start to get some kills. But I did really like, so there's like no plot to really be spoken of other than that. It's like, it's a bunch of kids at a camp. This groundskeeper comes back to get them. And we just have like the little interpersonal stories among these like little campers, but it's pretty much just like, there's one kid who's a peeping Tom. There's like this couple who like kind of wants
the
to
peeping Tom, by the way, is supposed to be like the sympathetic character.
So crazy. I was like, kill him, Cropsey. Kill him now.
He's and
kill
like,
him now.
Sorry, you finish first.
Oh, that's
I
all
get,
it was kill him now. That's all I want.
Before I get carried away. Like, yeah, he's supposed to be, he's supposed to be like a sympathetic character. And they try to like shape him as like, oh yeah, he's like a little creepy, but he's just misunderstood.
He's
awkward and he like doesn't know how to talk to girls.
It's like, no,
but then he don't like, they don't actually give him any development.
He has no
or
character.
Arc.
Yeah, all he
like,
does
he
is
just actually stays creepy.
The only thing he does is he peeks at more. A girl in the shower and then he peeps at her later kissing her boyfriend. And I'm like, why? What is happening?
Yeah.
I hate this kid.
they have it like Jason Alexander and like the head counselor be like, hey man, like, you know what? If someone's giving you a problem, you just come to me. Like, it's going to be all right. And you think like, okay, like this guy's going to, we're going to really like see some,
yeah.
some growth here.
Maybe
like
he'll do something heroic.
Like he's not actually trying to be creepy, but no,
he's literally just creepy.
He's really creepy.
Just creepy. But yeah, I did really like in this movie, it has this fun. So like, you know, you're seeing these campers do all their weird little stuff that they're doing. And then occasionally you'll get a shot that's like Cropsey's point of view. And it's like this really cool, like hazed out circle POV. And like you have, it's actually, it sounds exactly like the shutter sound to mm-hmm. me. That's like the like bump, 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 which
yeah.
is just like the heartbeat. But it's like, it feels like it's exactly the same tone as the shutter soundtrack.
The book.
No. The streaming.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Service,
it's
Shudder.
Yes, yes, exactly.
which
it's
is
exactly.
Apparently, I looked it up because I was like, "Is it just the same?" And did they just take that? But apparently, John Carpenter did like composed the theme for Shudder, and there's a bunch of other sounds
thanks,
in there.
JC,
thanks, JC.
Not Jesus Christ.
Not
John
Jesus
Carpenter.
Christ. John, the other Carpenter.
Yeah, the other JC.
but it's
no, sorry, no, Jenny.
Did you know,
Jenny?
That they're both carpenters. We don't have a lot of time, but I'm just gonna say I just really liked how every time it was Cropsey's point of view, it was really creepy. I thought
it was really,
really
creepy.
Creepy.
Also, the first time we see him, because all through that opening hospital scene, we don't see him. We just see his burned up arm. When we see him for the first time in the window where the creepy kid sees him, I jumped.
Yeah, it's scary. It's like
it
genuinely
really
scary.
Really scared me.
Yeah. I know.
They made him look very scary.
They made him very. It's Tom Savini, baby.
Of course it is. That's why yeah. all of the murders look
That's
great.
That's why all the blood is like so good. The other thing that I do want to say about Tom Savini that was really funny is that he said, Tom Savini, this is a quote from the Wikipedia, which is apparently from the MGM DVD. Savini recalls that the cast were literally queuing up to find out how they would die, making him feel like an assassin.
Oh my God. Incredible.
Which is really funny.
That's so fun.
And then the other quote from the Wikipedia that I just have to tell you before we move on is the director maintains, I can't remember what his name was, like Robert Malum. His last name's Malum.
Mm-hmm.
Maintains that he was Cropsey for about 90% of the movie, as he could not get anyone else to hold the shears the way he wanted to perfect the gleam bouncing off the metal.
Oh my God. Well, okay. If you want a job done right, you got to do it yourself. I know. We should say that Cropsey's weapon is some giant garden shears. Yeah.
Because he's the caretaker.
And it has the great scene that I want to see in any camping horror movie, which is somebody telling the story around the campfire about the killer, who is unfortunately real in the movie. It's
so fun.
We got two great movies in.
Yeah, I really enjoyed The Burning.
I did too.
Yeah.
I thought both of our summer camp movies were like, maybe the best you can choose.
Yes. I know. I felt
actually they might be the best.
I think they might be the best in the biz.
I think they might be.
I think we hit it.
I was like, oh, am I going to watch Troop Beverly Hills? No.
No, I'm not going to. I'm just going to watch Little Darlings again. One of the best movies. It's so good. It's so good.
I'm going
to
have to add that 4K restoration to my collection.
It's time.
This has been Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you later, actually, in July.
Yep. August. We'll see you in August.
Oh, my God. It's July.